From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those midweek open lines for you. Here's what's happening. Tragedy in Afghanistan. At least 7 people were killed, 30 others wounded when gunmen attacked the American University of Afghanistan in Kabul. Approximately 12 hours after the attack began Wednesday evening, Kabul police chief say that about 700 students had been rescued from the university compound. No word yet on the attackers. A ballistic missile fired from a North Korean submarine flew about 310 miles. Now, that's the longest distance achieved by the North for such a weapon, putting all of South Korea and possibly parts of Japan within its striking distance. Now, North Korea already has a variety of land-based missiles that can hit South Korea and Japan, including U.S. military bases in those countries. But its development of reliable submarine launch missiles would add weapons that are harder to detect before liftoff. That is a very dangerous situation. It saddens me to report tonight on the death of geologist Jim Berkland. His life ended quietly and only a few days before his 86th birthday. As you know, Jim would come on our show quite regularly talking about earthquakes and other predictions. He was an amazing man. And Cal Ori, of course, she wrote the book on Jim Berkland, and I'm going to get to her in a second, but of course, 247 people have been reported dead in a strong earthquake in Italy that we reported on last night, 6.2 magnitude. Cal's going to react to that, and also, of course, Jim Berkland. She wrote the book called The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes about Jim Berkland. Cal, this has got to be one of the saddest stories for us. He was one of a kind. I miss the guy.
Yeah, it's kind of eerie how this played out. I knew that he had congestive heart failure before a lot of people did, but I didn't feel it was right to say anything. The last time I talked to him was several months ago, and it was odd. It was odd. But this is some cool stuff. He knew. I talked to Jan, his wife, after he passed July 22nd. I talked to her about a week later. And he knew that his theories were validated days before his death. And he was so happy. And I was thrilled to hear her tell me that. But a new study was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Researchers claimed, I think it was on the 19th, it was making headlines all over the internet. The researchers claim there's a link to moon, sun, tides, and earthquakes, including the San Andreas Fault Zone. This is what this dude's been trying to get across to us for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, and he knew it. Can you imagine how awesome he felt on his deathbed that what he had so much conviction, you know that, for his theories, and it was validated. No, they didn't give credit to Jim Berkland, but they gave credit to his theories, and that was enough for him. And as I said, Jan knew that he knew, and so I was just so pleased to hear that. And then that leads us into the Italy quake.
Oh, my gosh. 247 people dead already, Kim.
What's
going to go up?
I bet it would probably go up to 300 or more, but and I'm sure he would agree with me. But get this. It was in his window. His last newsletter, he said August would be a shaky month. And here he was kind of lucid and not and still making predictions. And on day 7 of his primary seismic window, today, well, on the 24th, he did make a prediction that a global quake, it's not in the ring of fire, but a global quake, a major quake would hit. And there you go. That's what happened to central Italy. So he's still getting hits when he's gone because his theories, I mean, they're immortalized. We can use his theories, and that's amazing.
And Cal, I want you to step into his shoes whenever we need some advice and some expertise.
Of course. One last thing I have to tell you. I am going to Alaska next month, and I have a prediction about a big earthquake happening up there.
Geez.
So think of me when I'm at my Barnes & Noble book signing in Anchorage.
We'll say a little prayer for you, too. So we're talking about the Italian earthquake, 247 people dead right now, and, of course, the passing of geologist Jim Berkland, who has been with us on the air for just a number of years. Monsanto has withdrawn an application seeking approval for its next generation of genetically modified cotton seeds in India, a major escalation in a long-running dispute between India and the world's biggest seed maker. And also in India, farmers there are committing suicide over their GMO crop. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak has appeared less than impressed with the rumors that Apple plans to ditch headphone jacks in an interview with an Australian Financial Review. He simply says, look, that's going to tick off a lot of people. Rumors have been circulating for months that Apple's next iPhone will be much thinner, so thin that it may not have enough room for a headphone jack. Instead, customers would connect their headphones via Bluetooth or with an adapter that connects to the iPhone's charging port. Veterans and supporters in an Indiana community raised thousands of dollars to replace more than 300 bronze medallions stolen from veterans' gravestones at a cemetery there. Jeez, who would do that? The South Bend Tribune newspaper reported that the thefts took place at a cemetery and some of the medallions dated back to the Revolutionary War. An amazing discovery. A second Earth discovered, a planet orbiting Earth's closest neighbor, Proxima Centauri, could be the home or support life, maybe even alien life. Let's check in with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates. Stephen, I didn't want to get you back so soon, but this is an amazing story.
It sure is, George. We talked a little bit about it last night, but the European Southern Observatory has given a lot more credence to this. We now know, and folks get used to the name, Proxima B, around the star that you mentioned before, George, the closest of all stars to the Earth, the triple system, Alpha Centauri, Beta Centauri. This Proxima Centauri is a little red dwarf star. And those of you who have telescope interest in observing the sky, unfortunately for most of the Northern Hemisphere, we don't get to see it. And even if you did, George, it checks in at a magnitude of what we call plus 11, meaning you need a telescope to see it. But on the intrinsic side, this was all brought about by a group studying something, meaning white, these little red dwarfs, I should say, the Pale Red Dot Campaign. Around these red dwarfs, astronomers believe that there may be indeed, as we now know, Proxima B. We may be looking in the wrong place, because astronomers were looking around other stars for maybe intelligent life or habitable planets. Now we're really kicking it into high gear. Proxima Centauri, some 4.2 light years away, discovered back in 1915. It hasn't even been that long ago. But George, we were so excited when we heard about a star system called TRAPPIST-1, a little red dwarf star that had an exoplanet around it. That's 40 light years away. So the excitement is, and folks, if you think of it in terms if we sent a Voyager spacecraft to this particular planet, the Voyager itself, if we did it the same way we did in the 70s, George, it would take 70,000 years at conventional space speeds. So this is just quite a fascinating thing. And from the sci-fi side, I just had to end off on this. We all remember that great television series, Lost in Space, you know, 83 episodes.
Oh, yes.
And the Jupiter 2 spacecraft, who could forget it? Their first episode was a spacecraft called Jupiter 2, launched theoretically in October of 1997, a 5.5-year journey to guess where? Alpha Centauri.
There you go.
Always keep your eyes to the sky.
Thanks, Stephen. I love it. Half of the Americans who have left their church no longer believe in God, leading a surge of nearly one quarter of a nation who have no affiliation with religion, according to a new survey. That's amazing. The internet is awash with rumors about Hillary Clinton's health, but there's one medical condition that she actually is known to have, that is hypothyroidism, a condition affecting about 10 million Americans in which the thyroid is underactive, resulting in a variety of symptoms, including fatigue, weakness, and weight gain. All kinds of stories about the Clinton Foundation coming up. Reports tonight that the New York Times has a story that is so inflammatory, they're not even going to publish it. As critical reports pile up about the access of the Clinton Foundation donors enjoyed with Hillary Clinton's State Department and Donald Trump and his allies hammer over the allegations, few elected Democrats have rallied to the party's nominee's defense. They're up for election. They don't want anything to do with it. In a moment, Jerry Corsi joins us with his latest work called Partners in Crime, I want to preface this by saying we are not out to change who you want to vote for. We're not doing that. We're not attacking one candidate over another. As a matter of fact, Donald Trump still hasn't released his income tax. His debt on his buildings is huge. We don't know what's going on with that. He has filed bankruptcy in the past. So it's not that. We're not attacking Hillary Clinton tonight. What we are doing is pointing out an incredible story that you need to know about. Jerry Corsi is next with Partners in Crime on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. For the next couple hours, we are going to be talking about a subject that is truly mind-boggling, baffling. It's called Partners in Crime by Jerome Corsi, Ph.D. You know Jerry, of course. He writes for WorldNet Daily and is a regular contributor here at Coast to Coast AM. He's been conducting this investigation for some time now, and he has finally finished his work. The book is out, Partners in Crime. Jerry, welcome back to Coast.
George, always a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
I was talking with a friend of mine who has done some heavy consulting for the Democratic Party and some heavy polling. He's based in St. Louis. I told him what we were talking about tonight, what the program was, and he said, oh, my God, I can't wait to listen. So he is glued to the radio as well. And I asked him if this story and whatever else is going on is going to have any effect on the election. And he said, this is the most screwed up election I have ever witnessed. Polls are wrong. People are up. People are down. I don't know what's going to happen. And he says if he had to predict today, he still thinks Hillary Clinton would win over Donald Trump. I think that's going to be very changeable as we get close to the November 8th election. But tell us about the beginning stage of Partners in Crime, Jerry. How did this begin for you?
Well, George, I began investigating the Clinton Foundation maybe 2 years ago. A good friend of mine who is a really brilliant analyst in Wall Street, Charles Ortel, who had done work on, for instance, GE and GM. I mean, this is a top analyst, came to me and said, asked if I'd ever looked at the financial statements, the audited financials of the Clinton Foundation. And so we began an investigation, pulling all the audited financials and the regulatory statements, and it was absolutely clear that the Clinton Foundation was a complete mess. I mean, it looked like a criminal enterprise. The financials were so poorly constructed. Numbers reported revenue, one number with no detail as to where the revenue came from, and expenditures with one number and no detail on the expenditures. I mean, this is the kind of a crime sequence that no one, except maybe the Clintons, could get away with the IRS. You'd be shut down with this kind of really fraudulent, big gaps in the financial reporting. And that set me on to really examining whether or not the Clinton Foundation was the, you know, philanthropic organization that it touted to be. And the more I researched it, and others coming to the same conclusion, now even with more emails and more scrutiny on the Clinton Foundation, I think this is going to be a major problem for Hillary Clinton and the remainder of the election. And George, I agree. Sometimes I think this is an election, the contest is who's going to lose the election rather than who's going to win the election.
Really?
You know, between Hillary Clinton and the foundation, which I think is her major problem right now. And Donald Trump has his own problems, financial statements, many other issues of his business operations, and Donald Trump's gaffes. Between the two of them, it's just hard to know which of them is going to commit more errors between now and Election Day to cost them the election. But I think the Clinton Foundation is going to become an increasing issue, and there's already calls among newspapers, prominent newspapers, USA Today, Washington Post, and Democrats to close down the Clinton Foundation in recognition that these problems are serious and not going away.
Well, and you heard the story that I had briefly that the New York Times apparently has some kind of inflammatory story, and they think it's so hot, they're not even going to publish it, Jerry, about the foundation.
That's pretty shocking, George, and the New York Times has been very partisan in favor of Hillary Clinton, and I can imagine the editorial staff would be reluctant to publish anything that detrimental to the Clinton Foundation, but it's going to come out. You know, my book really supplements Peter Schweitzer's book, which is an excellent book, Clinton Cash. We're coming at it from different angles. Peter Schweitzer's arguing that the Clinton Foundation is a pay-to-play scam where there were corruption, you know, favors granted in State Department policy, for instance, for money contributed to the Clinton Foundation. My book, Partners in Crime, says, you know, despite that being difficult to prove, a much easier crime is to run a foundation for personal gain. It's called inurement. And here you have the Clintons coming out of the White House claiming that they're dead broke, and they each now have a net worth in excess of $100 million.
Jeez.
And their major activity has been the Clinton Foundation. You know, the State Department Secretary of State doesn't pay $100 million, and neither does the U.S. Senator position, and neither Hillary nor Bill Clinton have had any jobs or gainful employment since leaving the White House other than the Clinton Foundation, in addition to the U.S. Senate for Hillary and her Secretary of State position. And the Clinton Foundation financials, as I show in Partners in Crime, has ample opportunities where the financials indicate that tens of millions of dollars have been diverted from the financials. And pretty shockingly, Bill Clinton has been running a shell corporation, WJC LLC, which are his initials, William J. Clinton, with a pass-through account, a bank account where the money enters and then just goes immediately out of that account, which is very similar to what drug cartel dealers and terrorists, money launderers, do. And there's been no real explanation as why Bill Clinton has it run WJC LLC or WJC Investments LLC.
Jerry, how old is the foundation? When was it formed?
Well, the foundation was formed. This is a very good question, George. It was formed when the Clintons were leaving the White House at the end of the 90s, and it was created as the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation to fund the library for President Clinton in Little Rock, Arkansas. And in fact, you have to apply to the IRS in a Form 1023 to get a determination letter before you're allowed to raise money for a tax-deferred or tax-favored money for a charitable purpose. And the only determination letter that the Clintons initially got was for the Clinton Foundation. Even though the Clinton Foundation morphed almost immediately into raising money for earthquakes in India and other HIV, AIDS in Africa. But these were Clinton self-declared charitable purposes, and it violated federal law in that they had no determination letter from the IRS that allowed them, the Clinton Foundation, to raise money for those additional charitable purposes. And that's not just a technical violation of law. These are the kinds of violations of law that, you know, criminal grifters do in creating charities which are intending to rip people off, applying their, you know, their sympathy when an earthquake happens or another tragedy to raise charitable donations, and the foundation was never authorized to go in and raise money for that purpose.
If you raise money for a charity, you're supposed, I mean, there is some administrative fees that are held back, because I see it in, just about every charity that I've looked at. There's some, you know, administrative fees for the executive director and marketing and things like that. But most of the money goes to the charitable causes. In the Clintons' case, with the Clinton Foundation, if they collect $100, how much of that, Jerry, do you think goes to the charity?
In some instances, about 10%.
That's it?
That's about it. And, the financials make it very difficult, George. They get money from Unitaid, which is a tax structure in countries like France, where they're charged, people who go and fly in airplanes are charged a surcharge. The money is supposed to fight HIV/AIDS. It comes through the World Health Organization to the Clintons. This is one of the major sources of funding for the Clintons. And in no year that I've been able to find do the figures that the UnitAid says they give to the Clinton Foundation agree with the figures that the Clinton Foundation say they receive.
Jeez, hold on, Jerry. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about Partners in Crime. The book is just out. Well, I can't believe it, but I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina this weekend at our live stage show event at the incredible Diana Wortham Theater. Really looking forward to this. What a great theater, by the way. And the tickets, they're almost sold out. I'm going to tell you about them in a second. But we've been talking about this for a couple months, and here we are. The day is near. It's going to be Saturday, August 27th. Now, in terms of getting some seats, this is what you need to do. First of all, on the bottom level, two people had to turn their tickets in for a personal situation. There are two great seats left on the bottom, and then everything else is up in the balcony. So this is what you need to do. You go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. You click the Asheville, North Carolina event. You'll see it right there on the homepage. It takes you into the incredible Diana Wortham Theater's website. Click Buy Tickets. Then look for the date, August 27th. That's right there at the top. Click that, and then you can select your own seats. Now, what will happen is a map of the theater will pop up for those two seats that are still left on the bottom. So far, just click the picture of the bottom, and you'll get in and see the two seats that are available, unless somebody grabs them in a few seconds. And then you do the same thing for the balcony and click your seats and pick them too. They're going to allow walk-ins, folks, but if you have a computer, go to your website and take advantage of the tickets, and you can come in from all over the place. People are coming from, Atlanta. I heard some. There was a group from Kansas City. So come on in. And those of you who don't have a computer, you can call the theater during business hours. Here's that phone number, 828-257-4530. That's 828-257-4530. Three great guests are going to be there, and a few surprises and a meet and greet, and it's only a couple days away. It's going to be our live show, Living It Up in Asheville, at the Diana Wortham Theater. And welcome back to Coast. Jerome Corsi with us as we talk about Partners in Crime. We will take your phone calls next hour as well. Jerry, so when the Clintons left office, they said they were stone broke, primarily because of Bill's legal fees, because of the impeachment proceedings. How in God's name did they amass such a fortune so quickly?
Well, George, I think that's at the core of my book, Partners in Crime, the investigation I undertook. I mean, the Clintons, when they came out of the White House, even, you know, walked out with some of the furniture and some of the silverware. They took about $360,000 of gifts. Ultimately, they had to return $28,000 worth of household gifts and pay $86,000 for household goods and gifts. So, you know, they had to return the property they took out of the White House. They said they were dead broke. You know, even Bill Clinton, as recently as 2014, in an interview with NBC reporter Cynthia McFadden, he was in Africa, and, you know, she said, you know, you're getting speaking fees of $500,000 or more, and Clinton said, well, I got to pay our bills. Well, the bills included, I mean, Clinton had to pay something like over, you know, $800,000. He had a huge settlement with Paula Jones over her allegations, you know, of sexual abuse, and had legal fees that included, you know, defending themselves on the Mark Rich pardon. I mean, the Clintons were in a world of hurt when they left the White House, maybe $10 or $12 million in debt, they claimed. But then with the Clinton Foundation, you know, Hillary was a senator afterwards, and then Secretary of State. These jobs do not pay hundreds of millions of dollars, but they ended up each with a net worth of over $100 million.
Wow.
Coming out of the White House, Hillary, they weren't really dead broke. Hillary received $8 million for her the first book she wrote as an advance. And they also, that was for her book, Living History. And the Chappaqua House was $1.7 million purchase that Bill Clinton bought in 1999. And then Hillary bought a $2.85 million house in near Embassy Road in Washington. And the Clintons put $855,000 down on that house. So they weren't exactly dead broke, but the Clintons have always cried poor. And, you know, that's been one of the key elements of the Clintons. Oh, you know, I got to pay our bills. We're poor. We've got to accept all this money. And the Clinton Foundation, the major problem I'm pointing out in Partners in Crime is that the crime here, which is enormous, using the foundation to live a lavish lifestyle and diverting money from the charity into their...
For personal gain, you're saying.
Personal gain.
That should be taxable.
Right, it should be taxable, and also you can determine it through the audited financial reports and the regulatory filings, the 990 forms filed with the IRS, which are filled since the inception of the foundation in 1997 with errors, omissions, irregularities, inability to really comprehend or report in detail where the money came from, what it was spent for, and yet the Clintons, out of the foundation, have, you know, paid for five-star hotels, private jets, lived a lifestyle that is high and mighty, all of which was never reported as income tax to the Clintons, and the Clintons have diverted money. If you take a really detailed look at the financials, as I did, and Charles Ortel, the analyst in New York, was a great assistance. For instance, when the Clinton Health Initiative was reorganized as a separate corporation after Hillary became Secretary of State, if you look at the closing financial statement and then the opening financial statement for the new company, there's $17 million missing.
Jeez. Who was the brain behind all of this, Jerry? Who created the foundation? Who marketed it? Who raised the money? Was that primarily Bill?
It was primarily Bill, but Hillary also, it was a tag team operation. And I think some of the emails we're now getting make this clear, that the Bill Clinton was the major pitch man, you know, for the foundation. And whenever there was, I point out, for instance, in the India earthquake that occurred on January 26, 2001, right after the Clintons left office, Bill Clinton immediately shows up in India and forms the foundation with India, the American India Foundation, and they aim to raise $100 million for taking care of people who are hurt with this earthquake in India. Bill Clinton is the honorary chairman of this foundation. Well, again, all the financial reporting is slipshod. And Clinton forms this foundation with Rajat Gupta, who is a Clinton Foundation donor as well as in the American India Foundation for this earthquake. And Rajat Gupta, who is the head of McKinsey, ends up convicted in federal court and sentenced to 2 years in prison, plus, $5 million fine for his role in a massive insider trading scheme in Wall Street. That's another theme, is that the Clintons are consistently working with people who end up in prison and who are criminals.
Why would these companies, Jerry, pay bills especially so much money for a speech? I mean, this is unheard of.
It's on $500,000, $1 million speeches, and Hillary also is getting huge speeches out of Wall Street firms like Goldman Sachs and never releasing the transcripts of what she said. But clearly, these firms paying these kinds of fees have to feel they're buying access, have to feel they're getting influence by paying the Clintons these fees. I mean, how do you get one speech worth $1 million? Unless, of course, that you're expecting something to be done by the person giving the speech. And then the amounts of money raised. I mean, in this earthquake in India, there's claims that the Guptas make, you know, this is the guy who went to prison, saying they raised $1 billion to assist the victims of this earthquake.
They raised it, $1 billion. People, companies gave them $1 billion. Why didn't it go to the United States government and let them worry about it as they do all the time?
Well, that's, you know, a good question, George. And the other part of this is what happened with the money? Because there's clearly not $1 billion spent by the Clinton Foundation or by the, you know, this American India Foundation on the earthquake relief
right.
in 2001.
If anything, maybe they're spending, let's say, interest money or investment dollars that are coming in from the billion, and they don't even touch the principal anymore.
Well, it's very difficult to know because, you know, from 2001 on, when the Clinton Foundation audited reports are filed, it's clear that the fraud is running into hundreds of millions of dollars because the money is diverted, including to political purposes, it appears, because the funds that come into the foundation are nothing like reported, collected. You just get gross totals. You don't get any detail in the financial reports. You can't really track the money. And then when you look, for instance, at this AIF, the American India Foundation, it's as recently as 2015 holding gala fundraising events in states like Maryland, Virginia, Illinois, where the AIF is not even registered as a charity.
See, I don't have a problem, Jerry, with former presidents, you know, making a buck because of who they are and what they've done. But there comes a point where it's got to be above board, I think.
Well, and George, if a former president or anyone is going to run a charity, you're getting a tax-favored opportunity to solicit funds, and you're going to be
which means a company that writes a dollar to the foundation gets to write that off, right?
Or an individual giving
or an individual.
And you know, the point is that you're soliciting money from people who care. You know, the earthquake in India, the reports are on the television, your heart goes out. You want to contribute money. You send money to the Clinton Foundation or to a foundation where Bill Clinton is the honorary chairman, like this American India Foundation. When you find out the foundation wasn't registered, it's not approved by the IRS to collect money for that purpose, the accounting doesn't tell you what happened to your money, the audited financial reports, and again, this is major crimes for the auditors themselves, which include large firms like PricewaterhouseCoopers, who, you know, are producing financial reports that are impossible to really hold accountable because the gross sums reported do not give the detail you need in order to do an analysis of, you know, back to where did the money come from, where was it deposited, where was it spent, and yet the Clintons, you find them living lavish lifestyles, five-star hotels, big dinners, private jets, all of which is assumedly paid by the foundation.
There was a major earthquake several years ago in Haiti. Did the foundation get involved in that as well?
Yes, and this is one of my major, in Partners in Crime, I devote a whole chapter to the scams in Haiti, and people in Haiti are yet today protesting the Clintons. The earthquake was a massive earthquake in Haiti, and it devastated the country. I'll give you the exact date in which it occurred here in a second, but it happened on January 12, 2010. It was a 7.0 magnitude earthquake, which is a massive earthquake, and it resulted in something like almost 100,000 homes destroyed. There were over 300,000 people killed, another 300,000 injured, 1.3 million displaced. Well, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and so she immediately flies into Haiti. And Bill Clinton, who had just been appointed, you know, special envoy from the UN to Haiti, also flies in, and Hillary pledges the State Department is going to put all this money into Haiti. Cheryl Mills, chief of staff is in charge of the project. Cheryl Mills also has conflicting jobs with the Clinton Foundation and responsibilities with the Clinton Foundation while she's assisting Hillary as Secretary of State. They raise money with the, you know, and again here, the Bushes get involved because George W. Bush flies in, and Bush and Clinton are both raising money in Haiti. Bill Clinton, you know, you basically get more than $1 billion in aid from the State Department that went to Haiti. And
direct.
Yes, but, you know, very little of that money actually ended up in Haiti. A lot of it went to corporations in the Beltway. A lot of it is missing. You know, you still have a situation where the...
Was Aristide the president then, or was he ousted by then?
He had been ousted, and that's another long story of conflicting interests with the Clintons having supported Aristide, who ends up being a major criminal in Haiti. But he had been ousted by this point. But, you know, you had over the Clintons, by the way, Bill Clinton not only comes in as special envoy, but he ends up heading a special Haiti commission, which was called the Interim Haiti Relief Committee, that decided how the money was going to be spent from aid that came into Haiti. So nobody got to spend any money in Haiti. All the donations, the tax dollars, and the U.S. aid that were going into Haiti all came through the Clintons and didn't get spent unless the Clintons approved it.
So how much are they sitting on right now? We don't know.
We don't know. This is part of the problem, is when you look at the what was achieved in Haiti, you've still got massive, people dislodged, living in shanty houses. You know, the international donors probably gave Haiti $2 billion in relief. But, you know, the statements come in 2.5 years after the earthquake had occurred. There were still over 500,000 people homeless.
Oh, geez.
In hundreds of informal camps. Most of the debris from destroyed buildings was exactly where it fell. The UN camp that was set in with UN personnel coming in to help Haiti created cholera among the Haiti population. That's been documented in several international reports, introducing cholera, which then created an epidemic, killed thousands and sickened thousands. You know, Haiti, two or three years after the earthquake, looked like the earthquake had just happened 2 months ago. And yet all this money was supposedly pouring in, including the United Nations. It was all funneling through channels that the Clintons controlled. And the projects that were funded, including some industrial parks, and other projects, were, you know, woefully inadequate to handle the needs of the people who were dislodged by the earthquake. And in the process, the Clintons invited some of their billionaire friends into the Haiti party, including an Irish billionaire, Dennis O'Brien, who comes in again saying all the good things he's going to do, and sets up a telecom committee, a telephone company through which they were going to try to pay the Haiti people. And it's O'Brien ends up making millions of dollars.
You know what? I used to say years ago on just about anything that happens, follow the money and you'll find the source of why things are happening. I would guess, Jerry, and I'm just guessing, that most of these people get involved in these fundraisers and benefits, not because they love the cause, but because they see a way to make a lot of money doing it.
There's no question about it. And you had, for instance, this industrial park, which was called Caracol. You know, you again have millions of dollars. USAID put $170 million to construct a 10-megawatt electrical plant that was going to provide electricity to this. You know, you then have the International Development Bank putting in another $55 million. And the development, the whole Caracol project basically fails. And the only thing it's going to be able to produce is benefits to companies like Target and Gap, Walmart, that are expecting to get the low-cost clothing produced in Caracol Park.
Jerry, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're at the top of the hour. Another hour to go with Jerry Corsi, the book Partners in Crime. I'm going to continue chatting with him, but we'll open up the phone lines as well.